U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And welcome to the weekend, Friday afternoon here in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in. Okay, so you want to create a video game? I really don't know anything about video games, the creation of them, how, where you market them, how you sell them. I'm really completely ignorant. We're going to talk to a guy who's who does it for a living. In fact, I think they've got a new game coming out just this week in the second half hour. Also, Greg Hines will check in what's going on in Springfield. In the studio now, Andrea Haines from the Chicago Tribune to give us a look at what's going on in tech and innovation this week. Andrea, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
It's all about delivery trucks, isn't it? It wasn't too long ago Amazon was going to pay their workers to quit their jobs and open up their own delivery system. And now we've got FedEx going 24/7.
Yeah, our obsession with online shopping continues to change the world at a rapid pace. So now we have FedEx, you know, which has typically been a Monday through Friday. Then under a year ago, they actually added Saturday.
Well,
and now they're going to add Sunday.
That's amazing to me that it was just in September, I think, that they said, yeah, we'll start delivering on Saturday.
Yep.
And now that they're going Sunday this quickly.
Yeah, they can't keep up, you know, or they're trying to keep up because we are buying so much online. There's just this huge volume of the small parcels that we're getting from places like Amazon, and they are saying the volume of those will double again by 2026.
And so there also was a move here, and President Trump made, I know that Amazon wasn't quoted in this article, but President Trump talked about Amazon's deal with the post office and how blah, blah, blah. FedEx is pulling some of their business away from the post office, right? So they could actually be hurt by this.
Yeah, they feel like, you know, that the logistics of it are going to be better if they can do more of it in-house. And they're currently using the post office. So it will be some, you know, a revenue hit for the post office, which probably can't afford that either.
So does that mean FedEx is going to be hiring more drivers, or the drivers that they have are going to be working more hours?
So at FedEx, you know, they will probably do both. But at the post office, they are coming up with an innovative solution to the driver problem.
What's that?
They are testing self-driving trucks. And I feel like we keep hearing, oh, they're coming, they're not coming,
right,
in terms of the autonomous vehicles. You do see them show up in certain usages. Maybe not that you and I will be in them yet, but the post office is testing self-driving trucks carrying the mail between Phoenix and Dallas.
So it always starts, they're always starting these things out in the Southwest, it seems like.
Nice, right? Weather, right?
It's like nice weather, you
open spaces,
on the roads.
Nice weather.
And so this is a real-life program that we're going to have autonomous trucks taking the mail from Phoenix to Dallas.
Yes, they're doing a test. So they're going, you know, it's not necessarily that this will be the normal way yet, but
right,
they are working with a startup out there that's out of San Diego, called Too Simple, and they, you know, during the test, they will actually have humans driving and navigating, so it won't be literally autonomous, but that's what it would become in theory, and it would make potentially mail delivery a lot faster because trucks don't need to sleep if they don't have people in them.
Well, you know, I didn't think of that until I read about, I was just thinking of the manpower, the savings in salary and things like that. But, right, we do have, for good reason, these rules about how often or how long someone can be behind a wheel every day. And if you don't have a wheel, there aren't going to be these trucks can drive 24/7.
Exactly. So they're saying, you know, it could knock days off cross-country trips because, you know, you can run, as you said, 24 hours a day. And the post office spends tons of money, $4 billion a year on outside contracting of trucking services. So all of these logistics with all these companies are so intertwined and how they staff and all those things. So eliminating human drivers would obviously be a big step.
The other thing is that we hear that truck drivers are going to be victims of this autonomous vehicle, right? But the stories all talk about the fact that there's a truck driver shortage. I mean, this is going to help the postal service in the short range because they can't find drivers to drive the trucks.
Exactly. And what do you do, though? Do you want to tell people to be drivers? You know, that job,
right,
is obviously drying up.
Yeah, it's not a career move.
Fast as new jobs, right?
It's like going into to news, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Some of these jobs are becoming, you know, we're all going to be replaced by machines.
So if we're driving down the road, there will be someone behind the steering wheel, but will these trucks be, they won't be marked, right? I kind of liked what the guy says about the fact that they kind of like to remain, if you will, below the radar.
Yeah, it's funny. The company that's behind these trucks, the startup, said, like, they don't actually want to draw a ton of attention. They don't do a lot of marketing. They're not like, here's our autonomous vehicle, because people get distracted. They notice it. then they try to taunt it and, you know, do crazy things. So they're happy to kind of just cruise under the radar.
Just lay low, go at the speed. I wonder if they go at the speed limit or if they go 8, because you're pretty safe going 8 miles an hour over.
You know, they claim that their you know, invisible drivers are very polite. They use their turn signals, they follow the speed limit, and they're good citizens on the highway.
All right, coming soon to an interstate near you, at least if you're on the run between Phoenix and Dallas.
Yep.
My son is in the air right now. He's flying to Seattle. He's not really a germaphobe. I think you are a little more germaphobic, aren't you?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So there's a story about, and I always love these stories about what is dirtier than a toilet seat. That's always the, oh, there are more germs here than this. And so the new thing they're looking at, what are the trays that you use at the airport to
yes.
put your shoes in or whatever?
Yes, right. That not only you put your shoes in, but the key point is everybody else puts yeah. their shoes in them too, right? It's the big ones that you put your things in while you're going through the TSA line. So it does tend to be shoes and then often bags or, you know, the small stuff that you have to put in. There. So Midway and O'Hare are getting new trays that are treated with an antimicrobial product.
Ooh, that sounds really cool.
I know, microbials, right? We love to talk about that.
I'm antimicrobial, frankly, but yeah.
Yeah, you like surveillance and you like microbes. So yeah, they did a test during flu season and found that about half of the trays they tested had traces of viruses. Which is more than they found on elevator buttons, which mm-hmm. you know you need to use your knuckle for those, right?
Did not know that.
And surfaces in restroom stalls.
Okay, so see, that's what I'm saying. So that's the standard.
That's
so,
always the standard.
So the bins at the airports are worse than that, and so they're now putting these microbials in these bins. But that's not a guarantee anyway, right? I mean, we're still going to have to wash up and...
not lead to a false sense of security that you don't need to like scrub your hands and, you know, everything while you travel. And as a matter of fact, most of the things that we catch when we travel are airborne.
I was going to say way most. I mean, I think we freak out about touching things all the time and that's not really how we get sick.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, that does give you that sort of feeling of like, oh, I need to go scrub my hands. But most of it is what you're breathing. And that's why many times we get sick when we travel.
I never have that feeling. Oh, I've got to go scrub my hands.
Oh, really?
Ever.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You're
hey, one
lucky.
More. Tempest is the story. We have to keep your eye on Tempest. Tempest is the company that by Eric Lefkofsky, and they collect data. Now, they've been working on cancer, collecting all kinds of data on cancer patients that they think will help toward treatments. They just picked up another $200 million, and they're going to move into depression and diabetes as well?
Exactly. So they were founded with the idea of being a cancer-fighting kind of company. Based on data. This is by one of the founders of Groupon,
right.
who then went on to also work on Uptake, Echo Global Logistics, other massive local companies.
And so the idea is if they gather all this data, they can see patterns in it and see what sort of treatments might work and really move toward curing cancers or treating cancers much better.
Exactly.
Right?
That's the hope. And they have a lot of clients on the cancer end. They're worth, at this point, you know, their valuation is $3 billion, which
wow.
is massive. We've talked about unicorns many times, which is $1 billion. But we've also talked about the need for Chicago to have what they call Decacorns, which is a $10 billion company. So wouldn't it be great to see a few of these make that level and really have a ripple effect?
They are hiring, Lefkofsky says they're hiring 5 to 10 people a week.
Yes, they have 700 employees now, and they're planning to add several hundred more by the end of the year. So they are, this money is translating into jobs.
This is one of these companies that if what they're doing works, really could change the world. And it's happening right here in Chicago.
That's true.
If not, we'll have a lot of discs with data on it and nothing to do.
Also true.
Andrea Haynes, the Chicago Tribune. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Steve. You too.
It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and we certainly thank them for that. Hope you got a nice weekend planned. I'm actually going to be working tomorrow filling in for John Williams from 10 to noon, so stick around for that. We just recorded the Mincing Rascals for the week, so that'll be coming up a little bit later. They'll drop that. Later in the program, we're going to talk to Greg Hines. You know, Greg is the great political columnist for Crane Chicago Business, and this is a big day in Illinois politics. Well, I mean, it was a big day in Chicago politics, too. But this is the last day of the legislative session. Governor Pritzker with his first legislative season coming to an end. And, of course, he's got a lot of big things that he's asking for. They did move toward the graduated income tax, which was huge. But we're still waiting for any final resolution when it comes to, there's an abortion bill that is pending. But also the gaming. Well, we've talked a lot on this program about gaming, about whether or not you can one day sit at a ballpark and put bets down on the next pitch on your phone. That's one of the things that Governor Pritzker wants to get done. That has not moved very far at all so far in the legislature. Marijuana has moved through the Senate, so that goes to the House. And then there's the big infrastructure bill as well. So we've got a lot to get done in Springfield if they hope to get this all wrapped up. And then we haven't even considered the budget. So a lot going on in Springfield. We'll talk to Greg Hines about that in just a few minutes. Right now on the phone line is Bruce Dunlop. He's the Vice President of Global Business Development at Export Development Canada. Bruce, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks very much, Steve. My pleasure to be here.
Bruce, now I can never keep track. Do we like you guys again, or we don't like you guys, or where are we in that?
Hey, we always like each other, you know. We have our spats, but yeah, we're always good friends. We're family.
So you're doing all of this on the ground. I mean, how has all of this, these skirmishes at the upper levels, really had an impact on trade between the U.S. and Canada? Have you noticed any big change, or have you not?
Well, you know what? Trade remains super strong between Canada and the U.S. I think what happens is when you mix in some political uncertainty, it maybe causes businesses to hesitate a little bit, and they put plans on hold. So what our organization tries to do is continue to make them feel positive about the long-term story. Politics is a short-term game. We think this stuff's going to work itself out. Canada and the U.S. have a fantastic relationship, so that's why we thought, you know, it's time to continue our expansion.
Export Development Canada has just opened up, what, a mission in Chicago, correct?
That's right. Yeah, we just launched it last night.
And what will it do? Why is that a good thing for the business of Chicago?
Yeah, so the idea is that we will, what EDC does, essentially, we're Canada's export bank, so we can provide financial solutions to Chicago-based companies to help them integrate Canadian suppliers into their supply chain. So we give them another option to allow them to continue growing.
So if a U.S. company wants to import from Canada, you can give them loans to make that easier, more easily done?
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly what we do.
But I can imagine your work as sort of a billboard for these businesses in Canada, right, to try to get them a business in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, we're always trying to encourage Canadian companies to get outside of Canada in order to grow. Canada's a small market, so we have to trade. And the Midwest is just such a rich region, and Canada's had a long history with it, but we think there's a lot more potential. So that's what we're trying to do, is encourage Canadian companies to look further afield and to do business in the Midwest, essentially.
So there are 20 EDCs around the world, correct?
That's right. Yeah, this is our 20th international office.
And a second one in the U.S., and I'm all leading up to this. Yep. The other one in the U.S. is in Atlanta. I don't know if I would have picked Atlanta. How is it that you ended up there first?
Well, it's really similar to Chicago. Essentially, the two offices we open, and it just happens that Atlanta came first, they really opened at the same time. But Atlanta's kind of the hub of the Southeast, and Chicago's kind of the hub of the Midwest, right? So it's the business community. It's where the local banks are headquartered. And when you think about it, it's a transit hub, right? Both Atlanta and Chicago have major airlines. They get connections to the world. Each have different economies, but they're both very strong connecting economies for Canada.
When it comes to Chicago, what is it that, or the Midwest, I guess, and the Canadian imports, what are the big businesses? I don't think it's probably agriculture. What are the big import products?
Well, agriculture is a big one.
Is it? Yeah.
Agri-food.
Okay.
It's not necessarily the food itself, but it's, you know, technology that goes into those supply chains. But when you think about it, it's automotive, it's rail, it's clean technology now more and more. There's some financial services, and obviously there's some manufacturing mixed in there as well.
And so we talked about the fact of whether or not trade has been hurt because of the skirmishes between the politicians. How do you reassure companies that long-term Canada is a good investment, that this is the sort of thing that's going to survive when they might be worried about making an investment on a product that might one day face a tariff?
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. We encourage people to take the long-term view, because our view is that this stuff is short-term. And if you take a look at what happened with the renegotiation of the NAFTA agreement, although the discussion sometimes got kind of heated, I think what we've ended up with, although it's not been ratified yet, is actually a better, tighter agreement than we had in the first place. So sometimes the negotiations get a little nasty, but at the end of the day, you end up with something that's better for everybody on both sides. So, you know, that's what we sort of take into account as a long-term view. Trade between Canada and the U.S. has only strengthened over the years, and we think if you take a view that's, you know, out beyond the current 6 months or the headlines in the newspapers, you'll see that it's positive.
Canada is the U.S. is Canada's chief trading partner, correct? Number one.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Canada, the U.S. exports more stuff to Canada than it does to, you know, China, Japan, and the U.K. combined. I don't think people realize that.
I think you're right. I think that we don't. Okay, so where else does Canada send its stuff, if not to the U.S.? Who are your other major trading partners?
Well, the U.S. is by far number one. 75% of our exports go to the U.S., so we're really concentrated with the U.S. Clearly, it's our number one customer. But after that, we've got the U.K., Mexico, China are kind of the next three big ones.
All right. Well, listen, I welcome to Chicago, Bruce Dunlop, the Vice President of Global Business Development at Export Development Canada. We're glad you're here, and I hope this is the start, or maybe I should say the continuation of some great things. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for the warm welcome, Steve. Much appreciated.
You bet. Now say with me, go Golden State Warriors. Can you do that for me?
Go Raptors.
I didn't think so. All right. All right. Be well.
How did I do?
not too well, but you'll improve soon, I'm sure. We'll talk soon. Thanks very much, Ryan Burroughs. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. We thank them for that. A little bit later in the program, we'll talk to Dan Hines about what's going on in Springfield on this Dan Hines. Well, Dan Hines is working today as well. He's in the administration of J.B. Pritzker. But another Dan is in the studio, Dan Nicolaitis here. He is from Symmetric Games. They've got a new video game called Outpost Zero coming out in July, so almost next month. Dan, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you.
Bring
nice
that mic a little bit closer to you.
Sure.
Okay, so I was telling you off the air that this is one of those things, you know, it's a big deal, and it's a complete blind spot for me. I just don't get it.
Well, in 2018, the video game industry actually, for the first time, matched the movie industry in terms of global revenue.
So no kidding.
Revenue. Yeah. So
how do they make their money? Ads as people watch the games or in sales of the games?
Well, about half of video game revenue right now is in mobile games. So that's a lot of, you know, what you'd expect, a lot of little microtransactions, a lot of ads. And then the other half is on consoles, PC, where people tend to make more paid apps, where you have to pay upfront $50-$60.
Okay, so the population to whom movies appeal is huge.
Mm-hmm.
The population for whom games are attractive, I would imagine, is much smaller.
Well, it's growing. It's growing a ton.
I'm sure, that audience must really be engaged in spending.
It is. It is. That is true. It is also growing in terms of younger generations, especially like demographically. You see a lot more participation in terms of young women, and with the advent of games on mobile phones, you see it's just basically it's more democratizing. Everyone can get them. Everyone can play them at any time, and so you see it's much more pervasive in our culture nowadays.
I was talking about democratization. I always assumed that there were just a couple of big boys creating these games, mm-hmm. and you had to be with them in order to get a game out there and be successful.
Yeah.
That's not the case.
And that used to be true, you know, 15, 20 years ago, but nowadays, you know, you can get your game on the App Store or on Steam, and as long as you have a really good product and you can market it effectively, you know, it still takes money, but you don't necessarily have to have that big name behind you to make a splash.
But when my son plays, mm-hmm. he's playing against other people.
Yes.
Who aren't in the room.
Right, right. Multiplayer, yeah.
Right.
Multiplayer games, esports, as they call them nowadays.
Right. But so to do that, you've got to have a lot of other people who are playing to draw the crowd. So if you're an independent game producer, I would imagine that's a bigger hurdle to jump.
It is difficult. One of the ways that people do it is they put out their product for free, or they do a free version of their product to try to attract a lot of people into the game initially and try to get over that hump of getting kind of a critical mass of community.
It's like a word, you try to create a word of mouth?
Yeah. You try and make, the idea is to make it go viral, and you really want to attract streamers nowadays. That's kind of the main way that you get your game out there, is to get the attention of, there's people who play video games and stream it to YouTube or Twitch is another popular one. And they basically play games and have people watch them playing games.
So they're like Instagram celebrities.
Exactly.
But they're on YouTube. And
right.
People are going to watch them play the game.
Right, because they're making jokes, they're entertaining, or they're really good, and you want to kind of watch them, you're satisfied with watching them be good.
Okay, I don't get that. I understand why you might watch other competitions, and you know, and my, Noah will do that. We'll watch because he likes to watch particular players.
Right.
Maybe we're talking about the same thing. I don't know, but I don't know if you would just watch someone play a game just to watch them physically play.
Well, there's a lot of competitive games out there with very high stakes. I mean, there's like the Dota 2 tournament, the Internationals, coming up in August. That's one of the biggest video game tournaments in the world. I think the grand prize is like $5 million for the winning team. You know, a team of five kids, you know, typically between the ages of 18 and 25 years old, who are splitting $5 million. You know, that's huge. And, you know, that...
And people watch them like I watch the Cubs.
There's arenas. I mean, they sell out arenas. They have big stages where they're playing 5-on-5 with huge screens, and it'll be like a big event. And then you can also watch them from home. You buy tickets, basically to watch them online. It's a big business.
And I've asked my son this, and I frankly don't remember his answer, but you probably have a better one. But why? What is the attraction there? Because he will be drawn to particular players, right? Like I might love to watch, you know, Javi Baez hit a baseball.
Yeah.
He will love to watch a particular person play a game. But if you're just watching their moves on the screen, what is it? What do they do to distinguish themselves or make them attractive?
Well, part of it is personality. In a lot of cases, you know, these people are very entertaining. They're making jokes. They're just fun to watch. And in a lot of cases, they're actually very, very good at the game. So if you're a fan of the game you're playing, you kind of like to watch this guy who's pulling off mind-blowing moves that you couldn't ever hope to do.
Right.
And maybe it's a bit aspirational. It's very similar to sports fandom in a lot of ways.
One of my son's friends at Miami of Ohio is a varsity letterman. He's a varsity athlete in gaming.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's I would imagine, becoming more and more common.
Yeah, their League of Legends teams are popping up in universities, and people are getting scholarships to play, and it's truly an e-sport, you know, as it were. So, but yeah, and our game, Outpost Zero, I hate to shill, but here...
No,
It's also a multiplayer game, and we're kind of doing a very similar thing where we're pitting players against one another, you know, online.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about. So when this game comes out in July, people will be waiting for its release, or how is it that you're going to get it in people's hands?
Right now, we have a kind of a beta where people are playing it, an early version of it, and then we'll have a full release in July with marketing behind it and everything like that. But yeah, so we're looking forward to that a lot.
Tell me a little bit about the game. What's it about?
So basically, you play as a kind of an AI overseer that's sent to an alien planet to develop a colony for humankind. So the idea is there's this alien planet. It's too dangerous to send people there, so let's send a robot who's expendable. So you go there, you have to kind of exploit the natural resources there, build more robots that you command, and all the while you're competing against other players who have kind of have this similar idea, who want to take over the planet for themselves.
Where can people find it once it's released?
They can find it on Steam. Again, the game's called Outpost Zero, and it's on PC right now. We hope to get it out onto Xbox and PlayStation in the future too.
And how does Chicago fit into this whole ecosystem? Because I think we do pretty well when it comes to the gaming industry.
Yeah. I think we're a top five video game city in the United States in terms of the industry, the jobs that are here. We have a couple big names here. Of course, Warner Brothers, NetherRealm, who makes Mortal Kombat, is here. They're probably the most famous studio in Chicago. And there's a number of others that are kind of between the 50 to 150 employees. But then there's a very burgeoning indie scene. You know, I was saying to you earlier that the video game industry is very similar to the movie industry in the sense that there's kind of the big name players, but there's also the indie scene as well, where a lot of kids coming out of DePaul, which has a great video game program, are just making their own little games and tinkering with stuff and trying to get cool little experiences out there that are different from what the big names are
doing. And if you're the audience, you like to be in on the discovery in a way, right?
Exactly,
so
yeah.
They're more attractive in some ways.
Yeah, there's a whole section of the community that's really into the idea of discovering something new, supporting smaller players, smaller developers, rather, and you know, that's a huge part of the community.
All right, the name of the game is Outpost Zero. It'll come out, it's out in beta now, come out full-fledged in July. Dan Nikolaitis is in the studio. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. I'm smarter now. You did it. I think I understand.
Awesome.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. So I know this minute focuses on the business side of life, but the political news that happened yesterday definitely has some impact on the business scene, so it's worth mentioning. There was a bill in the works earlier this year to tax restaurants to expand McCormick Place, but Mayor Lori Lightfoot nipped that move in the bud,
and now it will no longer move forward. Restaurants already have a pretty small margin, and those within a 10-mile radius just dodged a bullet. But believe it or not, that was incredibly minor news compared to the details that were released about allegations surrounding Alderman Ed Burke. The most important were racketeering and extortion. This was in the wake of federal officials making public in November last year that they're looking into the office of Ed Burke. These alleged crimes caused Mayor Lightfoot to step up and make a statement saying no official in the city, elected or appointed, should ever profit from his or her office. Alderman Burke must resign immediately. And she went on to say, Burke can no longer continue to do his job honorably or effectively. Good golly, that's some serious stuff. All happening in one day. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. I don't know. We're talking about milking cows in the state fair contest. A lot going on in Springfield. I don't know that they're, maybe they are milking cows this afternoon. Who knows? Greg Hines joins us now from the Crane Chicago Business Newsroom. Greg, welcome to the Business Lunch.
My pleasure.
All right. What the hell's going on and what's going to be done by the time it's midnight?
Well, I'm tempted to say we're going to milk not cows but taxpayers, but we knew that was going to happen. It's budget time. There's three or four big things on the table. They're about to vote on a bill to legalize the recreational sale of the sale of marijuana for recreational purposes. I think the votes are there.
So that's passed through the Senate, right? So we're waiting on the House.
Passed through the Senate, we're waiting on the House.
It's not had a committee vote yet.
It has had a committee vote.
Oh, it has. Okay,
it's on the floor as we speak.
Oh, good. Okay.
They've been going now for about an hour. Then they're going to pass a budget. There appears to be little dissent on that. The Democrats run the show in Springfield, and they've agreed on things, so that's going to pass. The real question is whether they're going to pass expanded gambling or gaming, and whether they're going to pass a big capital bill. There's still a lot of motion back and forth on both of those.
What happened, or what is happening with the gaming bill? Because as I understood it, it started with the idea of sports gambling after the Supreme Court ruling, but then all of a sudden the casino folks started adding on, or the casino proponents, and it became a casino bill too. Is that what's weighing it down?
Yeah, I mean, this is an old song. We've heard it before. Whenever somebody proposes a gaming bill in Springfield, everybody who's not getting a piece of the pie says, well, why don't you take care of us? Why don't you give us something on this bill? So it started out as sports gaming, and then Mayor Lightfoot went down to Springfield and says, well, I want a Chicago casino, and at which point a couple folks from the folks from Danville and a couple other places cleared their throats and said, well, Chicago's going to get a casino. We have to get a casino, at which point the people at the track say, hey, what about something for us? And the people in the bar industry who have video poker say, we have to cut us in. So all of that, is my understanding, is in that bill right now, which makes it awfully big and awfully cumbersome. In past General Assemblies, it's gotten so big and cumbersome, it just sank from its own weight. It was too much.
I mean, part of me wants to say that's too bad, because it did start. I'm interested in sports gambling. I'm not interested in it. I don't like the idea, but I know it's coming, so we might as well get the revenue for it here as well. But if all this other stuff is going to be added on, could make it impossible. I have been around long enough, you have been around long enough, to remember when Mayor Daley proposed his big Chicago casino.
Yeah, I mean, all I can say is you have to think like a lobbyist if you represent one of these editors. You want your piece of the pie. I mean, it's like, you know, a bunch of kids at a table. I mean, Ma, she got more than I did. That's exactly what it is like here. And it becomes significant because, one, the state treasury needs the money. And, two, the latest word out of Springfield is that money from the gambling is going to go to support, on the city side, the proceeds, if they get their casino, is going to go to pay for police and fire pension, so the property taxes don't have to go up as much. On the state side, a lot of money is going to go to pay for a portion of the capital bill. So, you know, they kind of need something to happen, and maybe that'll hold it together.
Okay, right. So they've got to get the gambling bill through in order for the governor to get his capital bill.
If they don't get that through, it becomes really sticky, because some of the other taxes that he'd propose, a liquor tax, a tax on Lyft and Uber ride-hailing services, those appear to have fallen off the table, so they need to replace the money somehow.
Okay, and so you mentioned Lori Lightfoot going down and saying she wants a casino. How I was interested that she was able to sort of crush that McCormick Place taxes quickly and as easily as she did. I mean, she obviously is exerting quite a bit of power already.
She is, and in the wonderful way of Chicago politics, the minor politicians like to be led. I mean, she had no trouble reorganizing the city council at all. She kind of snapped her fingers, says, you're going to get this chairman, you're going to get that chairmanship, whatever. And there was just a little bit of harumphs from Ed Burke and a couple other people, right. But they didn't have a roll call vote. It was a voice vote.
Right. And so, I mean, you know, I keep talking, we talked about this earlier today, too, that, I mean, she has the power, or she has the ability to become a sort of a transformative figure in this city and in the history of this city. That's a lot, but I mean, do you see that coming true?
Well, I think yes, but the real answer is we don't know yet. I mean, in going after Ed Burke and some of these old-fashioned rules and doing things like streaming city council committee meetings on the internet so you can watch, that's good, but it's also pretty easy.
Right.
What's the real question is what's going to happen when she wants to push items on her agenda, and this McCormick Place tax wasn't, and there's resistance in the city council. Is she going to act like Rahm Emanuel and Rich Daley and pull strings and offer patronage jobs and blandish people, or is she going to be kind of a reformer and say, well, it's up to the city council? I think we all know the answer to that. So the question is, really fundamentally, is you don't have to be like Ed Burke, but if you're going to be a mayor in this city and get things done, are you going to have to be a boss, at least a little bit?
That's Greg Hines from the Cranes of Business, the Cranes Newsroom. Okay, the marijuana bill is on the floor of the House. We'll watch for passage on that coming up. Greg Hines, thanks very much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.